We are joined by contributor Carl Baker, who this week joins us to talk about a piece regarding the Port of Wilmington and its private operator, Gulftainer, and some headwinds it is facing as it continues to try and reach the lofty expectations created when it first signed on to take over port operations. Carl, we appreciate your time joining us here on The Green this week and your reporting this week as well.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just start by offering people a little bit of context. What were some of the key things the state was hoping this lease agreement with Gulftainer that they signed back in September 2018 would do for the state?
So I think principally the goal was to increase the number of those well-paying industrial jobs in the state. That's, if accomplished, that's always a real political win in Delaware. And then, of course, there's also the prospect that the state would make more money through through payments that it would receive from the private operator, and also have a bigger capital investment in the port's facilities.
Because that's something that the state really wasn't able to do, that last part, the investments itself. I think, as you mentioned in the piece, and the port often operated at a loss when the state was running it. The hope was that perhaps Gulftainer would be able to do more than the state could do on its own, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And really, the thing to keep in mind here is the way to do that conceivably is to both increase employment and therefore expenses while also returning a profit to the state. And to the private operator would be to increase the total amount of business. So that's the real key to this whole partnership.
So your piece looks at a series of issues that have kind of cropped up recently. Let's start with one, which is a change to the lease agreement between the state and Gulftainer itself. Can you explain what that change is and what kind of impact it could have on what the state winds up getting from the port and this arrangement?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Delaware Secretary of State, Jeff Bullock, the Department of State oversees this partnership, which actually goes through a state-owned entity called the Diamond State Port Corporation. But in emails, he essentially described this as a way to reduce it reduces the amount of money GT pays to the state based on the volume of goods that flow through the port every year. And in exchange for that reduction, the state actually gets some of its own debt that it owes to GT, gets that reduced. And so you might say, well, why does the state owe GT any money? Bullock, the Secretary of State, he described it as GT having paid closing costs, what were essentially closing costs when the deal was inked. And costs that the state also were responsible for. They paid those as well as what he described as legacy costs for employee benefits. Now, admittedly, this part of the story still there's still some details that need to be discovered and reported out. We still don't know, for example, what the interest rate was on that debt that the state owed to GT. So because of that, we don't really know whether or not this swap that they engaged in was advantageous financially for the state. But that's the nut of it.
And where does Gulftainer, we've talked a lot about these fees. We've at times heard them called royalties that Gulftainer was to pay the state for the volume of product that was moving through the Port of Wilmington. And we've really kind of heard throughout the kind of initial reporting of this deal that the state had hopes that there was a ceiling of, you know, that they could get $13 million annually from Gulftainer based on these fees or royalties. Do we have a sense of where Gulftainer stands on hitting the mark on those fees that it's sending to Delaware? Because I guess that would be kind of the key to knowing whether or not this swap is advantageous or not, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The short answer is that it's not hitting those lofty goals that 13 million mark annually, not yet at least. Now the minimum annual fee, even with the amendment, there's a minimum annual fee that Gulftainer pays. That stays the same. That's $3 million. But these the additional amounts based on the throughput, the amount of goods that goes through the port, are not anywhere near 13 million. I believe they're closer to 6 million for 2020 and closer to they expect them to be closer to $4 million for the current year, which ends the fiscal year, which ends at the end of June.
And at least some of that could possibly be attributed to the situation with COVID and some of the economic impact that, that the pandemic has had on the port, right?
Yeah, I think absolutely that appears to be the case.
So, Carl, there are a number of other issues that are also happening involving Gulftainer and the Port of Wilmington. Another one, in fact, that's brewing between the state and Gulftainer, and that involves Denrec. What's going on there?
Yeah, so that was something that arose, at least publicly, in March. So GT runs generators at the port, just these big diesel-powered, I believe, electricity generators. So Denrec says that GT did not obtain a permit for them and therefore issued them a fine, a more than $500,000 fine for that. Now, GT, though, among many things they say in their appeal, they said, hey, wait a minute. These are the same generators, same kind of generators that were used at the port before we took over, and therefore we shouldn't be fined for something that was done when the state was running it. That's essentially the dispute, and I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Right, that is in an appeals process at this juncture. One of the other things your story talks about is what's going on in terms of workforce and the unions that work at the port. Union officials were, of course, among those that hailed that agreement when it was signed back in September 2018. But your story indicates that at least some union workers have soured a bit on Gulftainer. What are some of the issues that they're raising about the company?
Yeah, so there are a number of grievances depending on who you speak with. There are disputes between various union members and the company, also among different locals at the port, but disputes targeting GT essentially are complaining that that they're not answering grievances, that the company is providing insufficient benefits, including health care and retirement. In the case of retirement, at least the union that had been operating under the state and had received state pension benefits prior to the transfer, they say members within the union say they haven't received any sort of retirement. Again, GT hasn't responded to this, to emails and phone calls for questions for this story, so it's unclear what their response is to those allegations. I first reached out to members of the union after I saw that a healthcare managed fund for employees was suing GT in federal court in New York, claiming that they last year hadn't paid their contributions, or last fall hadn't paid their contributions, totaling about $500,000.
And that's just one of a number of different pieces of litigation involving Gulftainer that Gulftainer kind of has on its own docket at this point. What are some of the other issues that it's fighting about in court beyond that one regarding benefits?
Yeah, so they all are about money. They're either claiming that GT hasn't paid what it owes, or claiming that it hasn't, that it's demanding money that it isn't rightfully owed. One of the disputes became particularly newsy last year. At the start of the lockdowns, the pandemic lockdowns, when GT very publicly blocked off the port to Wawa fuel trucks, trying to fill up at a fuel terminal that sits at the port, but it's actually owned by a different company called Buckeye Partners. That dispute went to trial last month, and we're all waiting the judge's opinion, judge's ruling on that. There's other cases involving a stevedore company called Murphy Marine that was taken over as part of the privatization of the port, and the amount that GT was to pay to the owners of Murphy Marine is the center of that dispute. And finally, there's one other recent dispute where Norfolk Southern is claiming that GT has not paid them for various costs associated with rail storage.
So going back to kind of what the state is expecting from Gulf-Tainer and the port under this lease agreement, one of the major reasons this agreement generated such excitement was the promise of major investment at the current port and some expansion of the port with a new facility at the old DuPont Edgemore site north of the current port. Is Gulf-Tainer hitting the bar on that piece of what people had been hoping to see from them?
No, it doesn't appear so. This looks like another instance where we don't know all of the details. But Secretary of State Bullock said these two-year investment goals that were written into the concession agreement, into the lease, have not been met. And he cited a slowdown of shipping that impacted GT as one of the reasons.
And I guess one of the key ones is the Edgemore expansion, which also seems to have slowed for reasons that may or may not totally have to do with Gulf-Tainer itself.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There appears to be, or there could be, a number of reasons. I mean, I think the point to keep in mind again is that this original plan is, we grow jobs while also making more money. And to make more money while also increasing expenses that would be part of growing jobs means you have to increase shipping. You have to have more cargo moving through there. Now that's harder with the pandemic slowing the global economy. There's also kind of emerging issues that started last year. I didn't touch on this in the story, but about competitiveness among ports in the Delaware River, in New Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania.
So what are some of the things that people should be watching over the next few months to get a sense of how things are going at the Port of Wilmington and with Gulf-Tainer? Where should people be kind of focusing on to see if perhaps some of this passes by and things get back on track, or if there's kind of long-term questions about whether or not the goals that were set can actually be reached?
I think the economy as a whole, that's going to determine a lot of this. If we see growth, if we see more shipping between the East Coast and various other countries, that will kind of ease any particular challenges, any particular local challenges there might be. I really think this story about competition among ports along the Delaware River is something to keep in mind as well. Again, last summer, members of Congress from New Jersey and Pennsylvania, they sent a letter to their colleagues who were on a committee that was examining a bill that would, among other things, help streamline the construction of the container port at Edgemore. And these members of Congress were essentially arguing that it would give the Edgemore facility and the Port of Wilmington an unfair advantage over their facilities, also on the Delaware River.
So a lot of things to keep an eye on at the Port of Wilmington and with Gulf-Tainer as this story progresses. Carl, we appreciate your reporting on this, and I look forward to talking to you again about this and other stories.
Thank you for the time. Thank you for